Renewable Fuels versus the EPA.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Morrison, and I'm appearing on behalf of the petitioners, collectively referred to in the briefs as the Biofuels Coalition. If I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
It's your time, so just watch it. If you want to save three, then you can.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, this is a case challenging EPA's decision to exempt three small refineries from compliance with the Clean Air Act's Renewable Fuels Standard Program, also known as the RFS program. Today, I will be addressing the four primary ways in which EPA acted beyond the authority of the statute and inconsistently with those terms, and in a manner that's also at odds with this court's prior precedent in granting these exemptions, straying far from the congressional intent behind these temporary and narrow exemptions to RFS compliance. First, EPA was authorized to grant only extensions of the original RFS compliance exemption and had no authority to offer new exemptions after these three small refineries' initial temporary exemptions had expired. Here, there's no dispute that
may I not interrupt to ask you a couple of questions that go to standing to you?
Yes, Your Honor.
To your legitimacy to hear this case, so to speak. How are you aggrieved by a decision in this case? What can we do to remedy your situation, in fact?
Well, Your Honor, three small refinery exemptions at issue.
Seemed like that would not be a drop in the bucket of national need, right?
A drop in a bucket is not too far from what this court has said is required to show standing. An identifiable trifle is actually the standard that we have to meet. But here we've got far more than that. We've got 200 million RINs, renewable identification numbers, that were dumped into the market. And that caused a big swing in the prices and of the RINs themselves in the fuels. By our estimates, and our record supports this, we suffered through our membership about 15 million gallons of renewable fuel that was not produced. We saw about $6.3 million in revenue lost. So it's Your Honor, it's simple supply and demand of economics. If you greatly increase the number of RINs available, those RIN prices are going to plummet. And if you increase the quantity of RINs, the cost of the fuel itself and the need for blending goes down. So it's a direct supply and demand type of situation that we have that caused us the harm.
In hard gallons, how much are we talking about? How many gallons?
We estimate of your
production.
15 million gallons, Your Honor.
And that's from these three refineries?
Yes, from the three refineries. And again, it's looking at this being a national market, Your Honor. So if you assume 200 million RINs is dumped into the marketplace, what is the amount that is impacting the Renewable Fuels Association and its members? And that's where we come up with the 15 million gallons. We have it in our papers and in our supporting materials for our briefs that give the breakdown of those numbers.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Your Honors, returning to my points, I wanted to just say one thing about the extensions that we were given. The government's position on extensions is that they can be broken in time. There can be an initial exemption, there can be a period of lapse, and then picked up again. Our view picks up from the court's decision in the Sinclair case, where it says where a term like extension is undefined, you go to the common, ordinary, everyday meaning of it. So to begin with that, we turn to the dictionary. We go to Black's Law dictionaries, and we see that it says the word extension ordinarily implies the existence of something to be extended.
Why don't you go to the statute?
The statute doesn't speak to...
Well, the statute says gives thee a right to grant an exemption, and then gives a right to grant an exemption, an extension of the exemption.
Right, so the statutory language, Your Honor, also supports our position. The statute speaks in terms of a temporary exemption, And the D.C. Circuit in the Hermes case, looking at that very language, said what we have here through the small refinery exemption is simply a bridge to compliance. That's the phrase that the court used. For these small refinery exemptions, they're simple bridges to compliance. And the last I've checked, I haven't seen a bridge with a big hole in the middle. That's what we're dealing with these small refinery exemptions.
Well,
it's a bridge
to compliance. We have this eligibility rule that's in the middle of the briefing that tells us that this is what is required to be a small refinery. So when you look at that, maybe just in a vacuum, and say, okay, you were something else yesterday, or maybe you didn't exist yesterday, but today you qualify under that definition of a small refinery.
That's right.
Would they be within the coverage of these exceptions?
No, Your Honor. Again, if
it has to start way back in 2006, 2011.
So from 2006 to 2011, there was a blanket industry-wide exemption given. Congress looked at, didn't know at the time what the impact from RFS compliance would be on small refineries. So it said, if you are by definition small, less than 75,000 barrels per day, we're giving you all a pass. You don't have to show disproportionate economic hardship. But that was meant, in the words of Congress, to be a temporary exemption. If you want to go beyond that initial period, they had extensions that had to show a disproportionate economic hardship. And if you showed that, all that you got was an
extension. So first you had to fall into this blanket exemption.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
First you had to fall within that blanket exemption before you're eligible to have any kind of extension.
That's right. Imagine, if you will, Your Honor.
So if you tomorrow become a small refinery, tough.
Right. So imagine a funnel, if you will, between 2006 or 7 and 2011. 59 small refineries qualify for that blanket exemption. They certify that they're less than 75,000 gallons or barrels per day. Coming out of that in 2011, 2012, it goes down to 13, or actually a total of 24, and it goes to 8, and it goes to 7. And then right at that point, EPA changes its position, changes its approach to these small refinery exemptions, and they start to
unless they give them another exemption or extension of the exemption.
Right, but Your Honor, they're granting
it to people. So Congress had these 59 people in mind, and if you're 60 or 61, you're out of luck.
Right.
That's really equal protection, isn't it?
Right. So all of those people undeniably got their exemption.
Yeah, but the 60th and 61 didn't.
They didn't.
Just
they were
fortuitous.
Either, right. But if they didn't make it, it was only a volumetric test, Your Honor.
Well, suppose they just started up into business.
If they just started coming.
Yeah, and they're a small refinery. They're immediately going to be put out of business.
They would qualify, Your Honor. If they're a small refinery, even if they just started business, if they're under 75,000 barrels per day, they're in to that blanket exception.
I'm saying if it came in after
that,
the expiration of the blanket exemption, they're out of luck.
Right.
That's not very much of equal protection of the laws, is it?
If they,
we create a little class that is going to get preferential treatment.
And EPA has done that, actually. It has found that where a refinery applies newly to the program, kind of jumping on the tail end of the bandwagon, even EPA has denied those new refineries. Because at one point, even EPA recognized it had to be continuous. It had to be an unbroken line between the initial temporary exemptions and later extending
them. And what's the best authority that you have to support that statement, that it had to be a continuous line? That is, you had to be in from the beginning and then extended.
Right. So
what should we look at?
Okay, I've got two authorities, Your Honor. One is this court's opinion in Sinclair, and I go back to this court saying where you have an undefined term in a statute, you turn to the ordinary meaning, and I've got my dictionaries to back me up. Secondly, you go to the cases that we cite. There's no case that's directly addressed this issue on whether or not a small refinery exemption has to be continuous. But we put in our briefs as many cases we could find looking at it, from everything from wiretapping cases to other contexts where the word extension came up. All of them showed an unbroken line, a continuous status. Even the one case that the government team cites, It had to do with a property case, and the government said, well, it didn't require a straight line, and the court didn't, but it was a continuous jagged line. It was a property case. So every case that's before the court that we've reviewed on that word, what an extension means, it means something unbroken. And that's our position. I think when the agency let these temporary exemptions lapse, that was consistent with the congressional intent that this temporary reprieve from these programs be diminished at that point.
I don't mean to get off the merits, but we have three companies involved here. And in two of them, it appears to me that the time to appeal has expired, that your 60 days plus 14 days to file an appeal. So you've only got one. I don't know if it makes any difference on the merits. Do you agree with that?
We believe our actions are entirely timely, Your Honor.
And how do you do that with respect to the two?
Well, number one, we're not challenging. First and foremost, the government's asserted that we're doing a backdoor challenge to the regulations themselves.
Well, it's final agency action, though, with respect to each of these companies.
Right. So,
so you have 14 days if you're not a party, and then you have 60 days to appeal it, if you will.
There's a federal regulation, 40 CFR 23.3, that talks about 60 days from an unpublished agency action,
right, that
where an appeal has to be taken. But that provision presumes knowledge on the part of the people who are able to make that challenge. Here, there's no dispute that the agency made these behind closed doors in a clandestine way. There was no way for the regulated industry or for anyone else in the biofuel sector to know that these exemptions were being extended, granted, or anything like that. They were administrative adjudications being given in silence. And so RFA and the other petitioners cannot be held
well,
to...
Well, don't the regulations provide that an unpublished decision will become final in 14 days after it's issued? And isn't the purpose of that to give people that are interested the opportunity to learn about it and to move forward in the 60-day window?
Yes, it's not our position, Your Honor, that we require publication in the Federal Register. If we had any kind of actual knowledge at all, I think this whole discussion would be different. There was simply no knowledge on the part of the petitioners. Your Honors, I see I'm rapidly losing time. If I may, I'd just like to point out one thing about the pieces I was going to cover in Sinclair, because Sinclair is a wonderful toolbox for us. And Sinclair tells really the court, it gives the court all the tools it needs to address this issue. Number one, first it required that the words be given their common everyday meaning as the word extension. Number two, it recognized that the concept of hardship is something that was more akin to suffering or privation, the words of the court. It's not the government's suggestion that the company's operations need not even be significantly impaired. Number three, Sinclair tells us that it required an evaluation of hardship to be a comparative evaluation. You have to look between and among the refineries in that sector. You can't look at them one by one or across the sector. Fourth, it ensured that any disproportionate economic hardship had to be caused by the RFS program. It cannot be caused by other things of the own making of the company. And finally, under Skidmore, citing to Skidmore, the court in Sinclair said that the pervasiveness of the agency's position depends in significant part on whether its position is consistent with its earlier pronouncements. Here, we have a profound announcement from the agency that is left unreconciled, that cost of compliance with the RFS program for these refineries is passed through and recovered, and that there is effectively no difference in the compliance burden, small and large, because the RIN costs are largely the same. So, again, under that test, we believe that the court should vacate these small refinery exemptions and restore the RINs to the petitioners. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Patrick Jacoby from the Department of Justice on behalf of EPA. With me just behind counsel's table is Sue Staley from EPA. And we've also got counsel for interveners. Just, I know we manage our own time. I'm going to try to leave about 3.5 minutes for interveners' counsel. I just note, I don't think Mr. Hardin is planning to argue, but if there are questions specifically regarding when he would, he's available to answer them. Your Honors, petitioners are attacking the existence of a program that Congress put in place to protect small refineries from the burden of RFS compliance. But the entire program is not before the court. The only thing before the court are three narrow, reasonable exemption decisions. And they should be upheld for the reasons I'm about to give. But I'm going to go right into some of the questions and responses that Mr. Morrison gave. First, he did not explain anywhere in his oral argument why he did not address the time bar argument we've made regarding the 2014 regulation. So in the 2014 regulation, EPA looked at whether or not a small refinery had to meet the throughput requirement, the 75,000 barrels per calendar year, and it asked the question, what does for a calendar year mean? Undefined term in the statute, and that 75450 01K is the only definition. It is the only definition of a small refinery in the entire statute. And all it says is you got to meet this throughput volume for a calendar year. EPA looked at the phrase for a calendar year. It had proposed to say in the proposal for the 2014 regulation, well, that means from 2006 all the way up to 2014 continuous, right? That would support a continuous receipt, eligibility and receipt of the small exemption. A small refinery exemption. But when it went to make the rule final, it rejected that idea and said, you know what, that's not fair. It could be that a small refinery comes in and out of that throughput volume requirement over the course of time and going forward, and we think what's the most important thing and what reflects the intent of the provision, and that phrase is in the final rule, that provision about for a calendar year, is you look at the year of that the application is received, so the current compliance year and the year before, so you get a pretty good example of what's going on over a 12, 18-month period.
So I think I'm following you. You're saying that if a small refinery initially complies but then increases its production and goes in such a way that it would be out of compliance, then what? Then you can not have an extension or you can have an extension?
I'm not sure I completely understand the question, Judge Lucero. I think what I would say is
maybe you weren't addressing extension.
So I think I understand.
What happens to the refinery that goes in and out of compliance?
Sure. So when it's over the throughput threshold, it would not be eligible to petition for a hardship exemption.
Right.
On a case-by-case basis.
But it was initially, let's say.
But it was initially. But then if it came back down under the throughput threshold in a future year, it would be eligible to apply for an exemption. So the point I was trying to make is
an exemption or an extension?
An extension of the exemption. Because I can connect these
and
up.
And that's an important distinction, isn't it? There's a bit of verbiage that slips around in the briefing. We're really talking about an extension, not an exemption. Only Congress can grant an exemption, right? Do you agree?
Judge Briscoe, I'm not sure if I agree with the last part, but I think I understand what you're saying. So if I may,
EPA's authority through regulation to grant an exemption?
It is under 75450B1. Which says, and this was not addressed by petitioner at all, it says that at any time, which is a phrase that the Supreme Court and this court have looked at phrases like that and read very broadly, it says that a small refinery, which means it has to meet the throughput requirement, that's the only eligibility requirement, may, if it demonstrates disproportionate economic hardship, receive an extension of the exemption.
And that is within the same paragraph and preceding paragraph that begins with subsection A. You've just talked about subsection B. Subsection A says temporary exemption. And it seems to me if we go down the road you're going down, There's nothing temporary about this. People can come and go, extend. It's all good. I mean, so I think at the end of the day, I ask, and you can tell me, what benefit would there be to increasing the use of renewable fuels if this eligibility is so fluid?
Your Honor, I want to try to address these somewhat in order. So the word temporary exists in the part you cited. Mm-hmm. It does not exist in 754509B1. But the larger point, which we're making our brief.
We shouldn't read B with A?
No, I think they're read together. The larger point I would make is that temporary refers to that initial exemption, first of all. Second of all, these exemption decisions are temporary. They're just for the compliance year. And if you think about the structure of the RFS, which petitioners almost blatantly ask you to ignore, the Renewable Fuel Standard statute sets out volumes, required volumes, up through 2022, which EPA has the ability to adjust. After that, EPA sets the volume. This is a prospective, going forward statute that has, there's no sunset provision. This is going to keep going. And so it will be the case, based on economic realities, that in some years, certain small refineries will have a harder time complying based on what this court has recognized are inherent disadvantages based on the scale of their size in certain years, where in other years they might not, and in other years they might not even be small. That is sort of the point here, is that I don't think there's anything in those two provisions that handcuffs EPA from having the discretion and authority to say, well, it doesn't have to be a continuous exemption. And in fact, the word uninterrupted is not in there. There is no dictionary definition of extension. They keep coming back to the dictionary. Mm-hmm. There's no dictionary definition.
What do we do with the word disproportionate, which you just mentioned? Is there a showing here in the exemptions, except I'm doing it now too, the extensions given to these refineries, is there a showing here that there is a disproportionate hardship caused by compliance?
Your Honor, yes.
Or do we just say, these guys are having a hard time this year?
Your Honor, we think for these three decisions there definitely is. And sort of just to back up another, and this is laid out in our briefs, but I'll try to do it quickly. If you look at REC underscore 523-28, that is the DOE study. It talks about the various factors used in DOE's matrix, where DOE is inherently measuring mm-hmm. disproportionality, mm-hmm. comparative metrics, refining margins, amount of renewable fuel blended by the small refinery, whether it's in a niche market.
And did the EPA follow those recommendations in any of the three cases here?
In two of the decisions, EPA, DOE said it thought a 50% grant was available, and EPA agreed with that and then actually granted 100%. So I would say in some capacity it did agree with DOE for two of those.
So if DOE says 50% and EPA says, no, we'll give you 100%, then you say they're in agreement?
On some level, Your Honor, yes.
On some level, because, like about half glass full.
Well, Your Honor, EPA's role under the statute is to look at what it's to consult with DOE, and it is allowed to rely on DOE's expertise, but it is not bound by it. And in fact, it's very clear from the way EPA has mm-hmm. proceeded under this entire program, and I believe it's even mentioned Sinclair, is that EPA has the ability and the duty to take an independent look at this based on other
economic
factors.
So at the end
factors.
Of the day, then, we should zero in on the analysis given specifically by the EPA.
Your Honor, the totality of the analysis, because on some level EPA is looking what DOE did and looking at those factors, but then it's also looking at things like operational losses, negative cash flow, and other indicia of negative financial performance. I don't want to get too far into the specific weeds because we've got some ceiling redaction issues. But if you look at the specific numbers laid out in our brief, the sealed versions of the brief, you'll see that those numbers are there. We're talking about mm-hmm. pretty large dollar figures mm-hmm. on some of those operational losses. So we do think that's met here. If I could just sort of cut back to this 2014 regulation and the extension issue, because there's a couple points I want to make. There is no dictionary definition of extension or extend that requires continuity. And in fact, there are various dictionary definitions of those words that mean what we propose in our brief, that it could mean to make available, to grant a privilege.
But you would always have to have an initial exemption in order to have a subsequent extension, correct?
I don't think that this statute requires that, Your Honor. I don't think that it doesn't say uninterrupted. It doesn't say that continuous receipt.
Well, I understand, but let's think of it in different contexts. The most simplistic, of course, being an extension cord. If there's no juice to plug it into, it's pretty academic, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I think you're getting right into the point we make in our brief, so let me make a couple things clear. Every version in their initial brief that of cases and things that petitioners cited related to spatial and temporal extensions, this is different. This is a legal privilege or grant, right? It's different, and so it should be treated differently. We cited a bankruptcy case in our brief to say, look, in comparing two different definitions of exemption, court can choose the one that it thinks is better. Petitioners say, well, that case
well,
is about...
That,
is
it, under that answer, then the question to Judge Kelly would be that everybody's entitled to an extension. If you don't have to ever have qualify for an original exemption, well, and you can always extend the benefit, well, you don't need an exemption initially.
I think, Your Honor, you're getting at two things, and I want to try to wrap this up and give interveners
right.
some time. One is that the phrase at any time, which is completely ignored by the petitioners and read almost out of existence, they're putting deadlines in there that do not exist.
Right.
And that the purpose of at any time is to allow refineries that meet the throughput volume who right. can demonstrate disproportionate economic hardship in a given year are eligible for an extension of that right, that privilege of not complying.
Even though they never had previously qualified for an exemption or applied for an exemption.
Even though they've never had it. And that gets one thing I want to correct before I sit down is the Dakota Access Pipeline case. We noted in a footnote that EPA had denied a petition based on the fact that a refinery came into existence.
Right, but one second. You've got a colleague who's getting pretty antsy.
I understand. I'll see the rest of my time.
Understandably so.
Other than to say, EPA has, in a brief in the Advanced Biofuels case in the D.C. Circuit, at page 50, footnote 13, indicated explanation for why it does not require continuity.
All right, we'll look for it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Peter Keisler on behalf of the intervener. I'd like to begin, if I may, by addressing Judge Briscoe's and Judge Lucero's questions about the meaning of extension, and then also address Judge Briscoe's question about disproportionality and Judge Lucero, your question about standing. With respect to extension, I'd like to underscore just how extreme and implausible the petitioner's interpretation is here. Their position is that even if a small refinery would close down without an extension of the exemption, it's ineligible if it didn't receive one in all of the preceding years going back to 2006. And Congress couldn't have intended that because the way the statute works, the burdens increase each and every year. They ratchet up. So Congress recognized that a small refinery might be able to comply
in
1 year.
That's a very, because I've got to understand you to help anybody, I've got to understand. There's quite a significant difference between an ab initio extension and an extension of an exemption after which there has been a break.
Yes, and Your Honor, all of these small refineries in this case got the initial exemption. So they're not ones
so
that never
the
got the initial.
So all the question is academic about whether it's ab initio as in this case.
Yeah, except that they did not continuously get exemptions right. for every single year since the beginning.
There's
and
been
that's
a
where the difference
break.
Is. Right, and where the statute answers that question is with the words at any time. Under petitioner's position, you can only petition for an extension of the exemption if you had an exemption in the immediately preceding year.
Right.
That is not consistent with the statute's requirement that you be able to petition at any time. And the reason Congress included that requirement is that it knew that as the burdens increased, some small refineries that might be able to comply in year one or two or three wouldn't be able to comply in years 5 and 6 and 7. And as far as dictionary definitions, Oxford English Dictionary defines
Let's
to extend.
Let's not argue about dictionary.
Okay. Then to move on to Judge Briscoe's question about disproportionality. The record in this case showed ample evidence of disproportionate impact on these small refiners when compared to the industry as a whole. Negative net refining margins, at a time when the industry as a whole had positive refining margins far above.
And attributed to this program.
Well, it was that this program would cause additional hardship to these struggling refineries at a time when they were underwater.
And so you're debating the point of it's just a pass-through cost. It's not going to hurt you because you can always get it back from your customers.
Yes, and economics doesn't work that way. The reason regulations and taxes impose... Yes, Your Honor.
10 seconds, please, Judge Briscoe.
Each of these exemptions amounted to a fraction of 1% of the total renewable fuel obligation for the year. Collectively, less than 1%. Your Honor used the phrase drop in the bucket. The notion that these tiny exemptions could have moved the market the way they're suggesting, because they're really talking about all the exemptions EPA granted, vast majority of which were to other refineries taken as a whole. When you reduce it to just these individual exemptions, and that's what they have to show, harm from these exemptions, it's like saying that because Ford, all the cars that Ford puts on the market affect demand and price, which of course they do, that if Ford manufactured two more cars or two fewer cars a year, that would affect demand and price.
Thank you.
That's not even an identifiable trade.
Thank you. Amy, give him one minute more.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. I just want to emphasize one point that I think is important. The phrase, at any time, that's a red herring. At any time doesn't refer to when the exemptions have to be. By the statute and the regs, at any time refers simply to when the person, the small refinery, can submit an application. The statute is filled with dates and deadlines, sometimes calendar deadlines. Congress was simply saying if a small refinery wanted to extend an existing exemption, it could do so at any time. It did not say that the exemptions could be at any time. That's an unfair reading of the statute. It's simply giving the applicant this chance to say that. One other last thing. We talked about exemptions being a bridge to compliance. The whole notion that you could have small refinery exemptions up to 2022 is simply antithetical with what all the courts have found about this bridge to compliance and about this initial temporary exemption. And it would really take what Congress envisioned as a temporary, narrow way for companies to get up to speed and turn it into an open-ended exemption. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Thank you all for your arguments this morning. This case is submitted.